Welcome to Pomegranate Health, a podcast about the culture of medicine. I'm Mick Cavazzini for the Royal Australasian College of Physicians. In the last episode, we heard about specialty training in a typical country town. Today, we're going much further into the bush. If you fly into Broome from the east, you're struck by the emptiness and the colours. For hours, you see nothing but red desert. Then over the Kimberley, you see river gorges carved through rocky scrub. Finally, you hit the shocking turquoise of the Indian Ocean and a strip of impossibly white sand. The remoteness is humbling, even more so when you realise a couple of regional archaeological sites have been dated back 47,000 years. This means that the Kimberley was not only one of the first inhabited areas in the continent, but that it was populated even before Europe was. Aboriginal people now make up almost half the region's population, and many are living on traditional country. For a tourist on a brief visit to Broome, these epic scales can be easily forgotten as they stroll down the main drag looking at pearl jewellers and the seafood restaurants. But the experience for a health worker is very different. They are there to serve a region twice the size of Victoria, with a scattered permanent population of 45,000 and an annual tourist traffic that is five times higher. On average, remote settings in Australia only have 11% as many specialists per capita compared to major cities. And this means that pathology is often much more advanced by the time it's diagnosed. Broome itself only has about 19,000 residents, and according to the modified Monash model, you're in the most remote classification the moment you pass the Malcolm Douglas Crocodile Park on the edge of town. Broome Hospital has 40 beds, and there are five smaller hospitals in places like Derby and Kununurra on the eastern edge of the Kimberley. The day-to-day operation of these is thanks to district medical officers, or DMOs. These are GPs with procedural skills including anaesthesia and obstetrics. The regional service team has two physician roles that are based in Broome, who run outreach clinics at 22 remote locations. Although there are hours of dirt roads and resources might be scarce, this remarkable model of care works because of the strong relationships between many different healthcare professionals. To get a sense of what it's like to work and train in this environment, I called up three medics who've made Broome their home.
So my name's Lydia Scott. I'm a general medical consultant with the Kimberley Regional Physician Team. I was a registrar with the Kimberley Regional Physician Team whilst I was doing my advanced training in general medicine. And I also lived in the Kimberley for a few years as a teenager and grew to love the region and the lifestyle up here.
So my name is Lee Fairhead and I am a first year general medicine advanced trainee. So I have relocated to Broome to do 12 months of core general medicine advanced training. And that's having completed my basic physician training in Perth in Western Australia. I myself also spent time in the Kimberley as a student.
Mm-hmm. And finally, this episode wouldn't be possible without the help of the Broome Doc Studios. So Casey, tell us about yourself and what need you're trying to address with your website and podcast.
Thanks, Mick. Yeah, my name's Casey Parker. I am a rural generalist, so I'm a GP by trade, but work as a hospitalist up here in the Kimberley. I've been in the Northwest for 15 years now and in Broome for 12. The general ward is generally run by GPs or generalists like myself, mm-hmm. and we certainly work very closely with our physician colleagues because we have a lot of complex medicine. So I started the Broome Docs podcast about 8 years ago now. The main reason we started it was because I know there's a lot of really smart GPs out there that do lots of amazing medicine. And I just wanted to sort of share a lot of the stories and bring together a community so that people wouldn't feel so isolated and could learn off one another. So that was the basic premise. It's actually a little known fact that there's actually a lot of procedural GP anaesthetists and critical care doctors all over the country. And we've just completed a survey actually that showed there were 655 GP anaesthetists in Australia.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about some of the perceived or actual challenges that come up about rural medicine and training in particular. Of course, in a big country like Australia, there's going to be resource limitations in regional and remote places. What are some of the clinical tools that you have to do without up in Broome that city doctors might take for granted?
Well, in Broome, we're about 2,500 kilometres from Perth. And in Kununurra, our patients are over 3,000 kilometres from the MRI machine for Western Australia. But there's nothing that helps clarify your thought process as to whether an MRI is really needed as just trying to explain to the patient they're going to have to take 3 days off work to travel to get an MRI. Practicing up here without all the resources of a tertiary centre also puts the focus back on clinical skills and the cognitive aspects of medicine. It certainly does help you clarify in your own mind what investigations are really necessary and whether they will actually change outcomes for the patient.
Maybe Lee can reflect on the idea that you do have to be a bit of a jack of all trades in a regional centre. You end up doing a bit of everything, which you might not get the chance to do in a busier training hospital in the city. Has that been your experience, Lee?
In terms of being a jack of all trades, I think that's what any generalist is expected of, and general medicine is a specialty itself which allows one to have a high level of skill set across a broad range of specialties, and that model works extremely well in the Kimberley. I would argue that certainly what happens in the regions is that you get exposed to what actually general medicine is as a specialty rather than what it has perhaps been watered down to in a tertiary hospital. It does allow you to invest yourself more in patient care because you're here for a longer time and you can follow patients through their inpatient journey, their outpatient journey, in a way that is just usually not necessarily able to be facilitated at shorter rotations or more, you know, shared among more registrars in a larger hospital.
That point you made about the patient focus, someone mentioned that as well, that you get a real continuity of care with a particular patient. You might see them come into emergency, then you review them on the wards the next day, and in a week you'll see them at an outpatient. Like there's not as much farming out of those different roles.
Exactly. It also allows you to be more patient focused and to work with the patient, because the consequences for their medical management if they are in a remote community or if they require transfer to Perth, and the impact on their family and their wider community is really brought more to the fore. And learning those skills as a trainee is invaluable no matter where you are, and really hone your outpatient and long-term chronic disease management skills for patients. And I think as a team in particular, we then work closely, as Casey had said, with the DMOs in hospital. And that's a huge advantage with being in a smaller centre where you have personal relationships with your colleagues rather than over the phone relationships as sometimes you experience as a sort of third in line service registrar in a larger hospital.
We talked in the last episode about the specialist training program, which provides Commonwealth funding for registrar positions in regional locations, and also encompasses suburban settings with high needs. Broome has 2 STP posts in general medicine and 1 in paediatrics, and regional outreach is written into these job descriptions. The hope for the specialist training program is that trainees will remain in such settings to continue their career. But there are many perceptions about the rural experience that put trainees off. One of these is that in a small supervision team, you might not get as good supervision as you would in a bigger teaching hospital. Or for basic trainees preparing for clinical case presentations, that there wouldn't be enough exposure to a diverse caseload. While Broome doesn't currently take basic trainees, Lee Fairhead says that these are not obstacles she's experienced in her own training pathway.
I think if you look at the entire training pathway, so I've not come across that issue. As an intern, I was in the regional town of Geraldton. I've obviously done my basic physician training in Perth, again, with a different model of care and different exposure to specialists. And then being in Broome, even in a smaller centre, I'm supervised obviously by Lydia as one of the consultants, but then I have supervision from a consultant who's actually based in Melbourne, a consultant who's based in one of the tertiary hospitals in Perth and actually heads general medicine training in WA. So my exposure and being able to spend more time with them as well has been very varied, and in fact is one of the biggest take homes for me already, is being able to be exposed to different consultant style, including supervision, teaching and clinical provision of services.
Yeah, and for the registrars that come up to the Kimberley, we're very mindful of providing a diversity of supervision. And just like we use telemedicine as a clinical tool, we also use technology as a tool to supplement our teaching, supervision and research capacity as well. So for most of the research projects that our trainees do up here, we deliberately try to include someone from a tertiary centre as a co-supervisor on that project. The visiting subspecialists that come up here from cardiology and nephrology and rheumatology have also always been very supportive in helping support our trainees and helping diversify the supervision. And because we have such a wealth of pathology and workload to work with up here, we can also help trainees focus on particular areas of medicine while they're here. And if they feel that they need exposure to a particular subspecialty to help round them out, we can do that. And that's part of just being in a small enough machine that we can individualise and personalise the supervision and content of the rotation more than I think a lot of tertiary departments would have the capacity to do.
Mm. Yeah, so you've already described that framework that I was going to lead up to, that the RACP has a minimum standards for adequate supervision. Each basic trainee must be allocated to a rotation supervisor and then an educational supervisor who oversees longitudinal progression. And, you know, trainees listening should be encouraged by the fact that from next year, the selection and appointment of supervisors and network directors will be competency-based. There's many parts to this safety net in case any listeners were worried of being stranded.
And I think that should be reassuring, Mick, and I can only speak from 6 months of experience so far, but the capacity for myself to be supervised and have tailored input thus far has been some of the best supervision that I have had. Hmm. It should also be seen as an advantage to have a smaller team for the reasons that I sort of explained before.
I'm going to refer a few times to some findings from Dr. Linda Selvey. She's a public health physician at the University of Queensland who's been co-directing a program called Building a Rural Physician Workforce. She presented her data at Congress, and she described the possibility of smaller centres to be what she called fragile workplaces, in that there's a small leadership team, so the success of that place really depends on the personality of just a few individuals. And there were historic examples of similar-sized institutions with exactly the same sort of complement of staff and isolation. And one was thriving as a training centre while the other was more claustrophobic, and there was a high staff turnover and potentially toxic atmosphere. I don't want you to point any fingers at Broome Hospital, but can you see examples of this, that you really are reliant on strong leadership? And
can I comment on that one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been in small hospitals for 20 years now, and one thing I really like about small hospitals is that those small cogs turn faster. And so when you want to change something, if you want to improve the quality of your service, it's actually a lot easier to do, because I can sit in a room with every doctor that works in the hospital and we can talk about stuff, whereas trying to change that in a department of 50 or 60 doctors is really hard to do. But you're right, it does require good leadership, and we're lucky to have that in Broome with these guys here.
No, you've countered a lot of those stereotypes that people have, or the fears that people have. Again, from Linda Selvey's lecture, she says that one problem with attracting people out to regional sites is that maybe there's a lack of a professional identity amongst regional physicians, and that's perhaps in contrast to the GP culture, where the rural generalist really is a brand. It is a heroic kind of identity. Would you see that contrast between the two medical communities?
I think that's an interesting observation. I think general medical physicians just generally don't have as well-developed identity on the national level. But the extent to which that is a problem is probably another question. A sense of professional identity is important in the sense of you want to feel supported by colleagues in your same profession, and you want to be reassured that there's a way to maintain professional development in your within your career. I have found that working in the Kimberley, I've found that through technology, I can link with professional development activities interstate, nationally, overseas. Within Western Australia, there's a WA Regional Physicians Network. We have a weekend once a year where we request lectures and updates on the topics that we most need, and we stay in touch throughout the year. And I think that helps counter the perception of a lack of professional community. The main thing is that a big part of my professional identity here is that I work as part of a team. That might be different types of doctors, but that we all work together. And and because of that, I don't feel a sense of professional isolation at all.
In the Kimberley region, there's also a team of paediatricians, two obstetricians, a rotating team of surgeons, and a public health physician. There isn't much private medicine in the region, but throughout the year there are visits from city-based specialists in nephrology, rheumatology, cardiology, and ophthalmology, among others. There are also dialysis centres in Broome, Derby, and Kununurra, with a total capacity for 120 patients. Casey Parker describes some of the more recent developments at Broome Hospital, and also some of the competencies unique to practice in a scarce setting.
In terms of our sick patients, we have a high dependency unit as well, which allows us to manage pretty much everything up to ICU level care. We now basically keep all of our septic patients and a lot of our other unwell respiratory type patients as well, whereas 10 years ago, they probably would have gone out on a plane, which was a really bad way to manage people in the Kimberley and cost a lot of resources. So the model's really evolved with the use of the physician input. And we utilise a daily video conference with one of our sister hospitals down in the city, so we can talk to intensivists over a live VC and with the patients in the room. So it's been really good, both for patient care but also for the education of the generalist workforce up here.
Is that a daily, is that a bread and butter process that you might consult with a specialist back in Perth, or is it special occasions type thing?
Telemedicine is definitely part of our daily practice. We use telemedicine within the region often, as well as teleconferencing with the tertiary sites.
Oh, so you might be the base that Kununurra speaks to for expertise.
Yeah. So as well as visiting Kununurra and Halls Creek, Wyndham, Fitzroy Crossing, and Derby. And many other communities in the region, as well as the in-person visits, we can provide ongoing continuity into patients' care by teleconferencing into that site when required. There are times where we've teleconferenced with people at home. For example, I video conference with a young patient whose comorbidities mean he can't mobilise anymore. Rather than him going to the hospital, I can actually just video conference him for a lot of the appointments. It doesn't replace in-person care. There are a lot of things that still need to be still are best done in person, but telemedicine is certainly a very good supplemental tool to do that, which can help to make sure that we're providing people the frequency of reviews they should have and providing optimal care.
Well, let's get into some of the sort of unique competencies that you can develop in a smaller centre. For example, point of care ultrasounds. So many rural generalists don't have a radiology department on hand, and point of care ultrasound has become a pretty standard skill in those settings. Casey, I know from your website that you're a huge fan of POCUS, although perhaps not POTUS.
Yeah, absolutely, Mick. It's something I'm very passionate about and try and spread the word about quite a bit. It can really be a very useful tool to be able to move treatment forward, particularly after hours on weekends. Unfortunately, once again, the formal training pathways are probably not there yet. Yeah. And it's hard to acquire those skills in a rural place. But certainly if trainees have an interest in that and come to the rural areas with those skills, it would be very valuable.
Can you describe the flow of a consultation that uses this technique? Are you interpreting on the fly, or do you still sometimes send pictures off? And how does it work?
Yeah, so a good example would be our renal patients. They come in, may have missed dialysis, for example. That's a very common scenario here in Broome, and you need to sort of work out where they're at. And it's certainly a lot faster for me to assess their volume status and how much lung water is going on with an ultrasound, which I can do in a few minutes at the end of the bed, whereas the more traditional sort of ways of doing that would take a lot longer in our department, particularly after hours. And so that's one example where certainly there's a good evidence base for using ultrasound, and can often head off patients at the pass before they get really sick if you know exactly where they're up to, and probably is a good safety backstop for us in rural emergency practice.
One of the editors of this podcast from New Zealand recently did a course with the Otago University, and he learned a few applications of point-of-care ultrasound that are not that common for traditional sonographers, such as chest ultrasound for pneumothorax and pulmonary edema, and fast scans on trauma patients. Are these things that you're sort of familiar with and competent with?
So I can probably speak to this from the perspective of respiratory ultrasound. So one of our consultants here is dual trained in respiratory and general medicine. During our ward consultations to the patients admitted to the hospital, we regularly use ultrasound. For example, just this week, there's a patient with an empyema and another patient with a pneumonia that may be progressing. So I don't know that it would necessarily fit the definition of POCUS, but a respiratory trained physician uses that technology on a regular basis here in Broome and on the ward, which also then means that we can make decisions and liaise with specialists in Perth or make interventions here. And that's of a huge advantage, particularly because we don't have after-hours radiology.
Another focus of regional practice is Indigenous health. Around 45% of the population in the Kimberley area is Indigenous, compared to Sydney and Melbourne, where the average is just over 1%. Is it appropriate to think of Indigenous health as a unique competency?
On commencement, with the Kimberley Regional Physician Team, we do provide orientation that includes cultural awareness training, and there's new programs that the Yaru people of Broome are running to help people have a more meaningful understanding of the local traditional culture. But across the Kimberley, there are many different cultural groups. I think practicing well in Indigenous health, or practicing well in a cross-cultural context, usually at its heart means that you're considering the background of the patient in front of you, means you're considering their own priorities, and that's good to do no matter where you work in medicine. Definitely when you're working in Indigenous health, you won't be able to practice medicine well unless you do that. And so I think working in Indigenous health can make people better practitioners in that sense. One of the experiences that our trainees have regularly when they're here as physician registrars is going to different Aboriginal communities and providing care on country, often in the clinics, sometimes on home visits. And so I like to think that helps the patients, but I also think it helps our trainees understand how important it is to consider their plan for the patient's medical care in the context of that person's broader life.
And now let's talk about the psychosocial features of the rural population generally. We know that the rate of suicide is 1.7 times higher than what it is in major cities, according to the 2017 Atlas from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. There are higher rates of risky drinking, and all of these figures are even higher in the Aboriginal population. Should trainees have some good grasp of mental health before coming to a place like Broome?
Certainly an important part of practicing as a general physician is treating the whole patient. That's part of the basis of the specialty of general medicine. And that includes understanding the psychological cofactors that may be a result of their disease or contributing to their illness behaviour in the way that someone interacts with their disease. From what we've found with the registrars that have come up to the Kimberley, we have found that as long as they've completed basic physician training, that provides them with a good starting point through which they can, throughout their time here, develop a deeper understanding of how the psychological factors and even historical factors might be interacting on any one person's medical presentation.
And I can add from a trainee perspective, each Tuesday we discuss all of the patients who are in hospital, and that meeting is attended by the inpatient team, the local psychiatry team, the local obstetric team, the local Kimberley Renal Services, the local Aboriginal Medical Services, the local palliative care team. Although you may be faced with maybe unique situations or complex comorbidities, the way that we're able to offer continuity of care for our patients as well as work together closely with specialties means that even though you've got a complex patient, the plans often seem to be easier to enact than sometimes when you come across that in a tertiary setting.
Before we finish, just a few thoughts about quality of life. In the study we've been talking about from the University of Queensland, it's been shown that rural practitioners have equally high job satisfaction ratings to their metropolitan peers. And yet a lot of them still move on for personal reasons. We talked in the previous episode about the difficulty of finding work for a partner. But rural medicine is compatible with many different lifestyles. And at the risk of misappropriating a 90s tourism campaign, you'll never, never know if you never, never go.
Yeah, we expect that when our registrars are working for us, we're going to be deliberately stretching their brains in all sorts of different directions, asking them to apply knowledge that they've developed over the last few years in challenging contexts. And, you know, our registrars learn a lot because they work hard. But I think everyone's very aware of the importance of recruiting and retaining staff. And it doesn't get taken for granted that people have been willing to commit to coming up here to work. We respect the fact that in order for them to come and give us our best efforts in clinic, we also then need to give them time to enjoy the region and have time to maintain their own mental health, their own lifestyle and relationships. And I would hope that we're able to strike that balance. And I suspect that's probably why most of the consultant roster is staffed by three of us consultants that used to be registrars that chose to move back to Broome long term.
I did laugh when I was looking you up, Lydia. I found a job ad for a registrar position that you'd posted, and it had pictures of the camels on Cable Beach and people kayaking on the azure waters of the Indian Ocean.
That was me last weekend.
Okay, so it's not just the advertising material.
Nope, it's not just the advertising. It's a beautiful backyard. And genuinely, seriously, as a trainee, the opportunity to do remote clinics and to actually see patients on country and in community whilst seeing the beautiful Kimberley is absolutely a huge attractant to the job. Perhaps, hopefully, this is one of the most important things that gets crossed in the podcast. As a trainee, to move 2,500 kilometres, to change my hospital, change my supervisors, and to enter something unknown is definitely different. Moving to Broome and taking this opportunity, though, is one of the best things that I've ever done. And I would hope that those perceptions and trainees who have those perceptions just take the time to have a chat to people and to explore the options. This job in particular has been the most flexible job that I've ever been in. And having come out of exams and feeling thoroughly burnt out, the opportunity to be slightly more in charge, to be allowed access to your leave you know, obviously in consultation with the team, but, you know, not dealing with a faceless administration to get access to leave, truly being able to plan your year, including professional development, to make sure that even if it's just a perception that you're missing something in the city, you can upskill on things that maybe you're not being exposed to. There's huge advantages. And it was certainly an unknown me coming. My partner also moved here, but things do tend to work out in the long run, and a close-knit, hardworking team that is genuinely interested in seeing you excel as a trainee is unique and should be strongly promoted.
Many thanks to Lee Fairhead and Lydia Scott for contributing to this episode of Pomegranate Health. And special thanks to Casey Parker for sorting out the recording. Make sure you check out his Broom Docs podcast and blog for lots more great discussion about generalist medicine in the bush. You'll find this linked at our website, racp.edu.au/podcast. There's also a transcript of this episode, a comments forum, and links to other great resources for trainees. Or just search for online resources at RACP to browse the e-learning modules and video lectures for the basic training curriculum. There's also information about the specialist training program and other funding options for rural fellows to extend their skills. For example, Support for Rural Specialists Australia has 4 funding rounds a year that can go to all sorts of workshops: point of care ultrasound or echocardiography, vascular access, cardiac CT, even to brush up in a subspecialist department in a tertiary hospital. Finally, you can also nominate a colleague for the RACP Medal for Clinical Service in Rural and Remote Areas, which recognises outstanding service in Australia and New Zealand. Please put your colleagues onto Pomegranate Health, and remember you can always send any feedback to podcast@racp.edu.au. I'm Mick Cavazzini. I hope to hear from you.